beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so excited to be here with all of you today. I have a great show planned. My guest will be Lori Clevenger. She is a full-time farmer with Rise and Root Farm and has extensive experience in community gardening, farm education, and she's currently working at Why Hunger as the development coordinator. And Why Hunger is a national nonprofit organization that connects people to nutritious, affordable food while supporting grassroots solutions and inspiring self-reliance and community empowerment. And I'm so thrilled that Lori is able to join us today, and I'll be inviting her on in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the news and some things that, and of course, my recipe. My recipe this week, a beet and radish green and avocado pate. So I'll share that with you in just a bit. But first, what is going on with our country? Oh my God, are we living in a military state? What happened with this tax bill? It is just scary beyond belief. I don't recognize what's going on. I can't believe that the Republicans were able to push this through and that we were not able to get enough dissenters in that Republican Party to not pass it. It's just a bad, bad bill for everyone except for the very wealthy, and I mean very wealthy, and big corporations. And of course, Trump and his cronies and family are going to make out really big on this tax bill. And it's just unbelievable to me that we were able to pass it. It's just so upsetting how it's going to affect, as they call, entitlement programs. They say they're not going to touch Social Security or Medicare, but Medicaid, welfare, food stamps, or SNAP as we know it now, I mean, they're all going to be, you know, so impacted. And I'm sure we'll get into that conversation a bit with my guest later today, but it's just really so upsetting. I have to say, though, this week, on a higher note, I organized with my local community to feed a group of people that are in need that surround the area in Jamaica, Queens, around Rufus King Park. And this is my 23rd year helping to feed those in need. I partner with the River Fund New York Food Pantry, which is a wonderful, wonderful nonprofit organization that serves more families, I think, than any other food pantry in the New York City region. And we fed over 500 people in the park, Italian meal, baked ziti, Caesar salad, garlic bread, brownies, apple crisp, all homemade with volunteers that come together every year to cook in the IE Green Homestead. That's my home. And we invite people in. We have kids making cards. It's just a delightful few days of working together to create this. And then we were blessed on Tuesday with such beautiful weather, 50 degree weather in December. Who's heard of that? Of course, we should probably be upset with climate change about it. But it's really an amazing, amazing thing. And we were able to be there without coats and hats and serving up really delicious food. So it was wonderful. And this coming weekend, I want to put a big shout out to Community Solidarity, which is another nonprofit that I work with sometimes. They are out on the streets 6 days a week, in different locations. On Saturdays, they're in Bed-Stuy, 3 p.m. every Saturday, right outside of the Tompkin Park. And they collect food from so many different stores, you know, a lot from Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, bakeries. They're handing out so much fresh fruit and produce, which is a really wonderful thing because otherwise this food ends up in the garbage and ends up being wasted. And they give out thousands and thousands of pounds, and their belief system, as it is mine, is that food is a right and it's not just for the entitled. So I think it's really an amazing, amazing organization. I'm really proud to participate. So this Sunday, this is the share that I participate in. It's in Hempstead by the train station. Every Sunday around 2 o'clock, they're handing out thousands and thousands of pounds of fresh produce. And as you know, that's what's missing in most food pantries is the fresh produce. And that's predominantly what Community Solidarity has. They also have done a huge collection of toys and coats and other items that they'll be giving away for the holidays. So it's an amazing organization. So I'll be there this Sunday participating in that handing out of food and coats and toys. And I have some food that I saved back from Tuesday's event to share with them as well. One thing that Community Solidarity also does is they're predominantly vegan. So they do not share any meat or dairy items, although they will give out if there's some organic milk that a store is giving away, they will share that. But they on Sundays, they actually prepare a hot meal that they give to everybody, and that is always vegan. And so my apple crisp that I made for Rufus King Park was vegan, so I saved one since it was left over and am going to share it this weekend at the Community Solidarity. So come down to that if you can. Okay, what's going on in our world? Oh, my God, science. Can you believe it? They're bearing words like fetus, transgender, vulnerable from the Centers for Disease Control. I mean, how can you talk about illness and disease and not be allowed to talk about a fetus or someone's being vulnerable? I mean, it's just unbelievable. I was hearing, you know, reports this morning talking about, tax cuts that they were doing and trying to use the good words like sustainable involved in talking about the tax cuts. And I mean, it's just such bull. It makes me crazy. So we have, now the Center for Disease Control not being allowed to use words like fetus and transgender. And we have the Environmental Protection Agency not allowed to use words like climate change. I mean, we are living in, like I said, it's becoming a military state, and it just has me so upset. And so we really need everybody, and I really mean everybody, to start taking some control and power and owning this. And you can't just sit back and complain. We need to get out there in the front lines. I was so proud of my daughter last week. She took a bus down to Washington and got herself arrested in front of a congressman's office for protesting the tax bill. I mean, we need to be willing to put ourselves out on the line to stand up for what we believe in. There's an organization called Rise and Resist that is resisting all the different things that we're angry about, and you can find something that you can relate to. Food and Water Watch is another one doing great work. The Sierra Club, Environmental Action. There's so many different organizations out there that are mobilizing, Indivisible, that are mobilizing and creating opportunities for people to stand up and shout out that we're not going to take this anymore and put our feelings right out there on the line and make our representatives hear us. And we need everybody to do that. We do not have the money to compete with the corporations, but we do have the power of the people if we get it together to come together. And that's something that we all have to do together. It can't be done alone. So please, please write your congressman, call your congressman, show up at protests, and let your voice be heard. And, as depressing as this whole thing is, when I talk to people, the people that are not depressed about it are the people that are doing the action. Because when you're working together with other people, you feel the power and you feel like, as terrible as this is, it's going to bring us together so that we have a unified voice so that we can speak out against all this injustice. So, please, 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 get out there and be counted. Hashtag Me Too is still out there. You know, every day we hear about more sexual misconduct. This week it was actually in the restaurant. I was very sad to hear that that Patali had to step away from his restaurants this week because of sexual misconduct, and he's not denying it. He's accepting it. And it's, you know, the restaurant business is certainly not immune to the stuff that's been going on. It's just, it's wonderful to hear everybody speak out. And it's just amazing that we put up with it for so long. I remember an experience way back when, I mean, I think every woman I speak to has at least one experience that was really, really inappropriate. And so hopefully this awareness will start taking notice in the in our communities, and this kind of behavior will no longer be accepted. However, it's very difficult when we have someone sitting in the White House that has been charged as well with misconduct and is being allowed to continue on. It's just infuriating. But anyway, on another note, I would like to now share with you a beet and radish green and avocado pate. I've shared a recipe similar to this in the past, but I always use olive oil when I'm making these pâtés. And I have friends that are on a salt-free and oil-free diet, and I was going to their house, and so I wanted to make something that they could share in. And it actually came out so delicious, and it's really nice to think about. I mean, in the ideas of Michael Greger, who is the doctor who wrote the book How Not to Die, and who has a website called nutritionfacts.com, he advocates no salt and no oil for a heart-healthy diet. And my friend, who is also a healer, believe it or not, had a heart attack. And he had a heart attack because it's genetic in his family. Even though he had a macrobiotic diet, he was one of the cleanest eaters I've ever seen, and he still had a heart attack. And they put him on these beta blockers and medications that was making him feel terrible, and he just felt like it was completely in conflict of his belief system. And so he got off the medications by following Michael McGregor's diet. Michael Greger's diet, and it's really, really changed things for him. So it's a salt-free, oil-free diet. So instead of using olive oil, I used avocado as the oil. So I started with 2 cups of steamed greens, and I steam the greens and I squeeze all of the water out of it and I pack it down, and then I measure 2 cups of the steamed greens. And I used a combination of radish greens and beet greens. Then 1 onion chopped, 2 stalks of celery chopped, 1/2 cup of walnuts, 1 teaspoon chopped garlic, 3/4 cup of cilantro that you pack down when you measure it, 1/4 teaspoon of pepper, 1 avocado, 1 teaspoon cardamom, 1 teaspoon fenugreek, 1/2 teaspoon coriander, 1/4 teaspoon cayenne, and then juice from 1 lime. And first I steamed the radish and beet greens for about 5 minutes or so, locked in the flavor. Then I put it into some cold water to lock in the flavor and lock in the color, and then I squeezed all the water out of it. Then I sauteed the onions and the celery in a cast iron pan without any oil, and my cast iron pan is well seasoned, was helped. But you can use a non-stick pan if you don't have a good seasoned cast iron pan. Then I pulsed the greens and the onions and the celery in the food process until they were finely chopped. I added the cilantro, the spices, and the garlic and pulsed that some more. Then I added the walnuts and pulsed some more until it was fully blended. Once it was all fully blended, and use a rubber spatula to scrape down the sides, I added the avocado and I pulsed that some more until it was a completely smooth puree. And you can taste it for the spices. You can add some more spices if you want. You can add some more cilantro if you want. To me, of course, it tastes like it needs salt, but I'm not adding any salt. So You know, if you want to add salt, you can, but depending on who you're making it for, depends on what you want to do. And that is it. It's delicious. It's wonderful. And I'd love to have you all make it and let me know how you like it. And now I am going to invite my guests on in just a bit, but we're going to take a couple of minute break. And then it will be my pleasure to introduce all of you to Lori Clevenger. Be right back.
You're tuned to PRN. We'll keep bringing you the best and alternative voices for social and political news, the environment, health, the economy, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is keep listening. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
The story behind the story. Your story. My story. It's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell the story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Why would anyone ride on top of an elevator, lug around an 11-pound large print dictionary, or compete in a swim race unable to see the course? Well, this is me, and I've got some riveting experiences to share with you. Hey, I'm Mark Farrell. Join me for Insight, a new show coming to PRN.FM. It's about overcoming adversity, and who doesn't experience this in some capacity? I'm no doctor, but I'm an expert in me since I've been dealing with various forms of adverse conditions all my life, like having a rare visual disability that challenges much of what I do. Insight, real-life issues, including mental health, anxiety, depression, suicide, drugs, and alcohol. Celebrity guests will also reveal on Insight how they overcame adversity to make it, as well as your calls on challenges you struggle with. My difference makes me stronger. That's my mantra. Listen and discover how your difference makes you stronger. Insight, Thursdays at 11 a.m. only on PRN.FM.
We are PRN. 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 Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned. Tuned.
This is Cordelia Gaffar. I'm the founder of Workout Around My Day and the Stressless Mom of Six. I have started the new Replenish Me radio show to help moms to have strategies to get through their day and to renew themselves throughout the day with little small self-care tips. And I'll be having interviews with self-love coaches, wellness coaches, just to help you. So join me Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and replenish you.
Thank you for listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Greetings, this is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, co-host of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Eugene Zamperone and I are deeply involved with indigenous cultures and combine traditional knowledge with the latest research in natural health care. Join us each week on PRN.FM from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time every Tuesday or anytime on the archives. Each week, we'll bring you authors, professors, researchers, and activists who are committed to bringing you the latest information which you can use to ensure maximum wellness for yourself, yourselves, and your family. Tune in to PRN.FM every Tuesday, 10 to 11 Eastern Standard Time, or listen to the archive at 1-701-719-0884. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.
You are listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
The Dr. Peter Breggin Hour interviews the most exciting innovators in the field of mental health, from therapists and researchers to advocates of patient rights. Join me and other pioneers in psychology, psychiatry, and empathic living with the aim of improving your life and the lives of everyone you touch. Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen live or on the archives 24/7 at PRN.FM. Don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us. The Dr. Peter Breggin Hour interviews the most exciting innovators in the field of mental health, from therapists and researchers to advocates of patient rights. Join me and other pioneers.
Trying to be.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. I am so happy to be here with all of you and with my guest, Lori Clevenger. She is a full-time farmer with Rise and Root Farm, and right now is the development coordinator for Why Hunger. And I'm going to let Lori tell us about Why Hunger. Hi, Lori. How are you? Good. Okay. So can you tell me first, when did you first get your interest in farming?
I first got my interest in farming when I moved to New York City, which is ironic because I'm originally from Missouri and grew up in small rural agricultural towns. But moving to New York City and getting involved in community gardening and the food justice movement here.
I first met you years ago when you were working with Just Food and you were gardening at the Tacua Community Farm, which I recently found out was the first urban garden in the Bronx. Can you share with my listeners the impact that farm had on the community?
Well, I think definitely the impact, or one of the impacts is for a lot of community gardens that got started in the city and particularly in the Bronx, it was at first about kind of reclaiming land. And also beautifying their neighborhood and reclaiming their space for their community. So giving people a sense of more like ownership of their communities and what's happening there, being able to not just beautify their neighborhood, but for a lot of people, it was also about food sovereignty and having spaces to grow food to supplement their diets because of the cost of food, access to food has always been an issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, you were working for Just Food. Can you tell us a mm-hmm. little about Just Food?
Yes. So one of the reasons that I started working for Just Food is I had been doing some volunteer gardening and farming at a farm that was about 2 hours north of New York City. And that was really the first time that I'd been introduced to the idea of food as a political issue. I hadn't really thought about food. Food was something that you had to have. You bought it if you could. Food was something that was oftentimes a bit hard for myself and my mom growing up in Missouri, being people from very humble means at that time. And still, at this time, we often went to churches to get commodity cheese and like peanut butter and things like that to supplement our diets. And yeah, there wasn't anything like fresh vegetables that were offered in places like that. So when I started working at Just Food, the reason that it interested me so much was their practice of like not going into communities and saying, oh, this is how we can help you or how we think that you need help, but being invited by people into their communities and saying, this is what we need and this is what we need you to do and how we need you to do it to help us.
But Laura was just telling us how she was being invited into the communities to help them, not saying how they needed to help them, but being invited, and how that's a different scenario and how that works so much better. So anyway, so you were working with Just Food, and when did you leave Just Food and start working for Why Hunger back in 2011?
Yes. And so my transition from Just Food to Why Hunger was because I was interested in doing the work that we were doing at Just Food, but on a more national level, because there are people doing this kind of work all over. And I was just interested in learning about different models and helping other people get connected to each other to share the skills and the knowledge that they were building in their own communities with other communities around the United States. And that was a lot of what Why Hunger does. Is helping people to connect.
So Why Hunger is a national organization where Just Food is more just local?
More local and regional, yeah. Uh-huh. Mostly focused on New York City, but also working with farmers within a 200-250-mile radius, because they also do CSA programming and helping people to connect to farmers and farmers to connect to communities that are looking to start up CSAs or some form of food, direct food purchasing between consumer and farmer.
Uh-huh. And so so Why Hunger, working on a national level, how do they coordinate their efforts to get it out nationally, and what kind of impact are they having?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of what Why Hunger does is try to help fill in the gaps for funding and resources to help people actually get into the same spaces together and be able to share the innovative programming that they're doing within their own communities. Because a lot of the change around food sovereignty and food justice is really happening at the grassroots level. It's really being led by people who are experiencing hunger and poverty and all of the related issues, and figuring out with the resources that they have in their own communities how to address this, how to get more food into their communities, how to get more food that is healthy for their people to be eating, and as much as possible also culturally relevant to them. So what we try to do is get access to resources and funding, even doing some grant writing for some groups and helping them to come together and share their experiences and knowledge and be peer mentors to each other in many ways to help replicate, where possible, some of the successful programming that's happening within their communities.
Uh-huh. And when did you leave Why Hunger originally? I know you're back there now. We'll talk about that. But I know when I first met you back in 2011, we did an interview when you were working with Why Hunger. Mm-hmm. When did you leave them? When did you go out west? We were in touch a while. You're out west, and that's probably why we were crossing paths. And then you came back and you started your own farm. So can you just share a little bit of that transition with us? When did you leave Why Hunger, and when did you go out west? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
So I left in March of 2013 to go out to Santa Cruz, California, to the University of California there and the agroecology program that's out there that teaches you all about sustainable and organic farming. So I spent a year and a half really out there, first as a first year apprentice and then as a second year apprentice that helps with the new group of apprentices that comes in. And the whole reason for going out there is because I had got this idea that I wanted to try farming full time. But I was, at that time, I was just growing at Taqua, and I had, you know, a small plot, which, you know, growing food in a, you know, 10 by 10 plot is
very different.
It's very different. It has its own challenges, but it's very different from even thinking about growing food on an entire acre. And so I wanted to make sure and like figure out if that was really what I wanted to do. And so I went out to California and participated in the program, and they had they rotate you through different size, different scales of farming too, which are essentially like community or urban farm settings. And then another one, which is a larger production farm that they have about 20 acres and they grow on about 5 in any given year. And I really found that I enjoyed the production farming part of it. And that's what helped me to make that decision to come back to the East Coast here to New York and start a farm with 3 of my really, really good friends here that I've been working with since 2007.
Uh-huh. And when you say production farming, does that mean that you're using tractors and machinery besides, as opposed to just your hands?
Good question. So we have a walk behind tractor on our farm, which definitely helps us cover more ground and do more. But we are still mostly doing things by hand and using a lot of hand tools. We grow on about 1.5 acres each year and are really committed at this point to figuring out how to make small scale production farming a viable occupation for folks. And this is our third season. We've just completed our third season. And each year we're gradually increasing our gross income and slowly figuring out how to reduce our expenses. And a lot of that has to do with just creating efficiencies and how we do things. And we're very excited about this coming year because we've learned so much in the past 3 years that we're actually reducing the amount of land we're going to be growing on. We're planning to increase the amount of production we're doing in a smaller space. And we're going to see how that goes. Like, we did that this past season and we're able to do as well financially as we did in the previous season. And I also just want to add that we got a later start because we had a very rainy, kind of cold spring this year.
Yeah, really.
And then a very early frost. Like, usually we get a frost in mid-October. This year we had a frost towards the very end of September, the first kind of gentle frost. And then within a week, I think we got a harder frost that pretty much knocked out like all of our tomatoes and things like that, which right now are our highest cash crop.
Uh-huh. And you're in Chester, New York. How far up is that?
So it's about, from George Washington Bridge, it's about 1 hour and 15 minutes. Uh-huh. And it's just about, I think, a 20-minute drive from the Bear Mountain area. For those folks who are shoppers and familiar with Woodbury Commons, we're about 15-minute drive just further north on 17.
Uh-huh. And that soil there, is that part of the really black dirt soil that we all hear about that's so beautiful?
Yes. I think most of the time when you hear about the black dirt, it's people are usually talking about the Florida, New York area, which is, again, about like a 10-minute drive from Chester. And in Chester, there's essentially like a little valley area. It's all on two streets, Gray Court and Meadow Avenue. And there's, I think, about 160 acres total that are just in that valley. And so that land is now owned by an organization called the Chester Agriculture Center, which bought up that land intentionally to be able to make it available to beginning and low resource farmers. And so they lease the land to us and 5 other farms now that are sharing that space. Like, we all have our own acres that we grow. Rise and Root Farm, we actually lease 3 acres that we grow on there. And then there's also infrastructure there that really makes it possible for all of us to be able to farm, like a cooling infrastructure so that, you know, when we're harvesting day before or morning of, depending on when your markets are, you have a cooling facility to keep things overnight before you take them to the market and ship them out to restaurants. Or some of the farmers are, we have a range of size farms. Like, our farm's 3 acres. There's another like 5-acre farm. And then there's another, I think, 32-acre farm that is leasing from there.
And they'll only lease to people that are committed to sustainable growing methods, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. When you sign your lease, you're agreeing to only grow organically, you don't have to be organically certified,
right.
You have to be committed to sustainable organic growing and also to labor, you know, a good wage to your workers, making sure that they have a day of rest, all of the things that federally were not required to provide to farm workers.
Good. So it's in the slow food motto, good, clean, and fair all the way around.
Exactly.
That's kind of my group.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That was one of the reasons why we decided to start our farm there. And at least because the organization was in line with what our values are. We are a for-profit farm, but we are still very much practicing our social justice values that we all came out of New York City with. And, you know, as community gardeners, like all of us, we're working for nonprofits or doing community organizing around food justice and food sovereignty. And we want to make sure that as a farm business, we are also practicing that and being a good model for other people to be able to learn from.
Mm-hmm. And when you say they have good infrastructure, I'm assuming they also then brought the plumbing, the water to you. So you have access to water source, because I know that's so often a real detriment to or a real blockage for so many farmers.
Yes. So again, part of one of the wonderful things about farming in the black dirt is essentially, I don't know how much of the history you know about it, but it all used to be a glacial lake, like eons ago was a glacial lake. And then for a while was a swamp. And then in the 1860s, I could be a little bit off on that. The first people who started farming in that realized that they could farm if they were to drain it and figure out a system for draining the water off of the land so that they could farm it. So basically, it's all like all of the fields are framed in this system of canals that fill up with water when it rains. And then there's a whole system for pumping the excess water out into a pond area, kind of in the back area of the fields. And that's essentially what we use for water, to water all of our crops. You can buy pumps and set up your irrigation system that way. So it's a very uncommon resource for a farm to have.
Wonderful.
At least that easily accessible, yeah.
Uh-huh. And with all of you who are also so committed to the nonprofit work, do you have people come onto your farm to glean after, like after you've done the main harvest, do you have people that you open the farm up to come and collect food for some of the food pantries that you are affiliated with?
Mm-hmm. So we don't actually have a gleaning program, but we invite community groups. We have a lot of youth groups that come from New York City to help out on the farm and just spend the day on the farm. And then we do invite people, like when we have excess harvest, which is not, we're still a very small farm. The crop that we have the most excess of would be tomatoes. So when people come to visit, we always encourage them to take the extra tomatoes that we've harvested that are in the cooler. We try to send people home with bags of tomatoes and also flowers, because we do cut flowers, and so we'll have extra flowers, and we encourage people to go and harvest a bouquet for themselves. So we do it that way. We're still not large enough to offer a gleaning side to the farm. Yeah, but that is something that collectively, like all of the farmers there, are looking into and trying to figure out how to do. We found it a little bit challenging for us because the folks, at least that we've talked to so far, don't have the transportation to come and pick up any excess produce. And then we, as farmers during the season, we don't have the capacity to go and deliver. So that's something that we've been talking about as a group. Like, and in wintertime is when we all get together and talk about what's working well and things that we would like to change and work on together. So I'm sure that's going to be one of the things that comes up this winter, especially for the larger farms who have a lot of who just have a lot of produce, like after markets and things like that, that they don't have a place to move to right now.
Right. So as a starting farmer, obviously, while you're not farming, you were able to come and work back at Why Hunger. Right now you're doing development coordinating with them. Is that it? Fundraising? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Which is a new skill for me. But it's, yeah.
Fun.
Yes. It's really pretty amazing. Right now we are doing our major fundraiser for the year, which is Hungerthon. And so we've been raising money that we will be using to like re-gift to different organizations and also to help with the network building that I was talking about earlier and bringing different groups together for them to learn from each other and help build each other's capacity in their communities. So, and I'm interested in that because I think fundraising is one of the biggest challenges for a lot of small grassroots groups, not even just because of, you know, it's a whole kind of language that you have to learn, particularly for certain types of grants and writing to certain foundations. But it's also just a time capacity issue. Like, you also have to have the time to do that. And when people are working in the trenches on the ground, you know, either growing food or figuring out how to get access to food and then distribute it to members of their community, figuring out how to create more jobs in their community so that people can afford to buy food. Like all of these different, you know, hunger is not something that just exists. Hunger is created through a system of poverty where people just aren't, there's just not enough good jobs that pay a fair wage, a living wage for people. And so so many groups are trying to address all of those different issues and trying to like figure out the best way, or there is no best way. You have to address them all. Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't leave a whole lot of time to sit down and write grants or do fundraising and things like that. So one of the things that I'm interested in is being able to help support other community groups, either learning those skills or being able to do some of that work for them and helping them to raise money for their projects in their communities.
Yeah. You know, one thing you just said that just rings so true. So often people have the idea that people that are using these programs like SNAP and welfare, that they're lazy and that they don't want to work. And they don't realize that the majority of these people are working two jobs. They're just lousy paying jobs.
Exactly.
And now with this new tax bill, the fact that people making a low wage who are laborers, who are working hard, are going to be taxed at a higher rate.
Yes.
Than those that are sitting back just taking, you know, profits from their investments. I mean, it's infuriating. It's infuriating.
Yes.
You know, I don't think we weren't connected yet, so you didn't hear my beginning rant at the beginning of the show. I mean, it's just infuriating. It's just infuriating. What can I say? So you're doing really good work. Thanks. How have you seen the food movement change over the years that you've been working with Why Hunger? Okay, so we're having some technical difficulties, but I'm going to keep going because there is so much change that has happened. The food movement years ago, when Lori first was getting involved, as when I was getting involved, was much less, people were much less aware of it and much less aware of the need. And this food movement has just really been growing and growing. And the work of nonprofits like Just Food and Why Hunger are really helping to raise the awareness about these programs and what needs to happen. And so, as Lori was saying, you know, grant writing and getting that money is really, really so important. And this, you know, as I was saying before, this new tax bill is just infuriating because it is going to hurt the people that we need to be helping. It's going to hurt the people that are working two and three jobs, you know, making up a more than full-time job. Some of them, you know, it's not just a bunch of part-time jobs that they're putting together, but many of them are working double, full-time jobs just to put food on the table. And so these extra programs that help alleviate some of the struggles are there as lifelines. You know, I can speak for myself, you know, as somebody who was a single mother on welfare, you know, I needed that program to be able to feed my child. I mean, I came from a family of means. We did not struggle growing up, but when I chose to have a child on my own, you know, I basically was cut off. You know, I was like, okay, this is a decision I'm making. Well, then you take the responsibility. And I was, okay, I will. But that meant that I needed to, you know, work off the books to supplement my welfare check, because welfare wasn't enough. And these lifeline programs, you know, if they're cut, we're just going to have that many more people on the streets. And we really need to fight for these programs to keep going. So I'm still not connected with my guest. And that's unfortunate, because I know Lori has so much more to share with all of us. But all of you should go onto Just Food's website. You know, they're located in New York City doing some great programs. They're responsible for so many of the community gardens that are going on in New York City. And Why Hunger, which is a national organization, and they are raising funds really to give to organizations like Just Food. So, so it's really an amazing organization. Both of them are. So look them up online. And, you know, at this time of year, while we're all looking at places to give, those of us that can afford to do that, think about giving to some of these programs that are trying to get food into the hungry. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we all need to show up and stand up. And if you are in the Long Island area, you can come down and volunteer on Sunday. It's Christmas Eve Day with Community Solidarity. They will be handing out so much beautiful, beautiful produce to people that are in need, as well as toys and coats. The River Fund New York, which is the nonprofit food pantry that I partner with, so I've been doing it for 23 years. They are an amazing organization getting food to those that are in need. And there's just so many places that we that are more fortunate can participate and help. And we need to do that, because the people, our elected officials, are just not coming up to the plate. They are not, you know, their priorities are in a whole different place. It's all about them. They're selfish. They're not thinking about people in the bigger picture. And it's really sad, but it's just the way it is. So there are so many organizations that we can all give to and try to assist this time of year and all year long. I mean, the River Fund is there every other week in Rufus King Park, whether I'm there or not, handing out Thanksgiving food or Christmas food. They're there. Rain, snow, sunshine, whatever the weather, they're there. Same with these organizations like Just Food and Why Hunger. They are there putting it all out. And Lori was telling us that they have a Hungerthon coming up at Why Hunger, and they're doing fundraising for that right now. And I would like to find out more information about that. I don't know about it, and she was about to tell us about it. So I will be checking that out online, and all of you can do the same at whyhunger.org and find out what the Hungerthon's about and see if you can donate as well. And what else? I know her farm, Rise and Root Farm in Chester, New York, is really...
Hello?
Lori, are you back? Me?
I am back. Okay, that worked.
Glad. I'm so glad. I was just telling people that you were doing the fundraiser for the Hungerthon, and I was hoping you would get back so you could tell us about this Hungerthon.
Yes. So historically, like, Hungerthon started, I believe, the organization started in 1975, and I think they started doing Hungerthon around 1985. And it's just this amazing connection between radio stations, a lot of musicians, and also our grassroots partners coming together to talk about hunger issues. So we do a lot of interviews on the radios to do some awareness for folks who are fans of those radio stations. Musicians come in and help us, and they also do interviews. They also do a lot of donations for auction items and things like that to help us raise money, including donating themselves at times. And it's one of the ways to help raise awareness while also helping to raise funds to be able to support the work of grassroots partners all around the country.
Is this the program that used to be called Artists Against Hunger and Poverty?
Yes. So, okay. Yes.
All right. So it's kind of morphed into Hungerthon.
It's that, and it's one of the ways that, like, a lot of radio stations, I think we work with 10 different radio stations who really have been partners since the beginning and help to bring more of the awareness around what the issues, like, what are the actual causes of poverty, because hunger is just a symptom of poverty, and having conversations around that. And then also a way for grassroots partners to talk about the work that they're doing in their communities to help resolve it through addressing issues like having access to job training and having access to locally produced food, the issues of, you know, nutrition for in a lot of food pantries and kitchens. Like, traditionally, people used to do canned food drives, and mm-hmm. so we talk about that and how that's transitioning, and more soup kitchens and food pantries are actually entering purchasing programs with local farmers to be able to provide fresh produce into the community so that people can actually have nutritious food and not heavily processed food, which often has a lot of salts and sugars, like high fructose sugar in the foods and things like that, which contributes to a lot of the health issues, food-related health issues that people are experiencing. So we raise up all of those issues and talk about it on the radio programs. And people, you know, call in when they hear about this. And it's, for some people, it's an entry point to start learning about these issues and to learn about food as a human right, you know, as well as a political issue. There are lots of reasons why people don't have access to food. And it's definitely not because there's not enough food in the world, that we grow plenty of food to feed everyone. Right. But it's all about how it gets distributed. It's all about seeing food as a commodity instead of a human right.
Uh-huh. And you're talking about ending the cycle of poverty. You know, we also need to give access to education, because we need to, you know, not just job training, but the young people growing up in poverty don't have the same access to higher education to continue on so that they can break that cycle with their families and get out of it.
And exactly.
You know, and we need to work for more programs like that. Like, you know, Governor Cuomo's, support for higher education. The reality is it really doesn't help the poor people, because the poor people can't even pay for the books. It doesn't give them any money for books or for food or money for transportation to get to school. So you still need to have money to get in the door, basically.
Exactly.
You know? We need programs to cover the books and cover, you know, the food for the food that they can't, you know, they're not going to be working now, so if they're going to school. So they need to be able to, or actually many of them are working and going to school, but still they
exactly.
need to be supplemented. Mm-hmm. We just need those programs. And of course, we can't look to our White House government to make that better. So we really have to work on the local government. And,
Yep. Exactly.
Okay, we're just about out of time. You want to share the Why Hunger's website and anything else you want to just say before we run out of time officially?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the questions is like, you know, how do we get started with this? And, you know, for me, one of my answers was actually to go into farming myself. And one of the things that I really love about farming is knowing that none of the food, at least during the growing season, that I am eating was grown with, you know, modern day slave labor, you know, where people are being forced to work in the fields without a day off, being paid really low wages to grow and distribute the food that the rest of us in this country are eating. And a lot of those folks are, they don't have any protections because they're coming from places where they, you know, they don't have citizenship in this country. So they're being completely exploited. Mm-hmm. And that has been the history of our agriculture system here in the United States. And so farming for me, it wasn't just because I love it. I do love growing food, but it's also for me to be able to sleep at night, you know, and know that, you know, I can feel good about what I'm able to put on my dinner plate because I know that no one else was being exploited to provide the meal that I'm eating that day.
Yeah.
And so I think for people who, you know, like, well, where do we even begin? It's just like, one thing is to just start talking, like start shopping locally as much as possible, especially when it comes to food. Start having conversations with farmers about, you know, how their food is grown and the people that are growing it and, you know, what they're able to do. And I think for farmers too, it's like, it's really a challenge because agriculture is just not a high paying industry. But for people to just start becoming more aware about what the issues are and where their food is actually coming from and the people who are growing the food for all of us.
Right, right. Well, I think we're just about out of time. Thank you, Lori. I know our technology has a little bit to be desired, but we're working
on
it. Thank you so much for joining us. You're doing amazing work, and I look forward to working with you and Why Hunger in the future. Everyone's been
with us. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. We love you again next week. Have a wonderful holiday, everyone. Merry Christmas.